Osho, The Book of Wisdom, Volume 1. Discourses on Atisha's 7 Points of Mind Training. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 5.
Bhagwan, begin the development of taking with yourself. When evil fills the inanimate and animate universes, change bad conditions to the Bodhi path. Drive all blame into one. Be grateful to everyone. The insurpassable protection of emptiness is to see the manifestations of bewilderment as the four khayas. An excellent means is to have the four provisions. In order to bring any situation to the path quickly, as soon as it is met, join it with meditation. The concise epitome of heart instruction. Work with five forces. The instructions for transference in the Mahayana are the five forces. Behavior is important. The purpose of all Dharma is contained in one point.
Meditation is the source. Compassion is the overflow of that source. The non-meditative man has no energy for love, for compassion, for celebration. The non-meditative person is disconnected with his own source of energy. He is not in contact with the ocean. He has a little bit of energy that is created by food, by air, by matter. He lives on physical energy. Physical energy has limitations. It is born at a certain moment in time and it dies at another certain moment in time. Between birth and death, it exists. It is like a lamp that burns because of the oil in it. Once the oil is exhausted, the flame goes out. The meditative person comes to know something of the infinite, becomes bridged with the inexhaustible source of energy. His flame goes on and on. His flame knows no cessation. It cannot disappear, because in the first place it never appears. It cannot die, because it is unborn. How to bridge oneself with this inexhaustible source of life, abundance, richness? You can call that inexhaustible source God, or you can call it truth, or you can call it anything that you wish to call it. But one thing is absolutely certain, that man is a wave of something infinite. If the wave looks inwards, it will find the infinite. If it goes on looking outwards, it remains disconnected, disconnected with its own nature, disconnected with its own kingdom, disconnected with one's own nature. Jesus calls this nature the kingdom of God. He again and again says, the kingdom of God is within you. Go within. Meditation is nothing but a bridge to go within. Once meditation has happened, the only thing that remains to happen is compassion. The master of Atisa, Buddha, has said that unless compassion happens, don't remain contented with meditation itself. You have gone only halfway. You have yet to go a little more further. Meditation, if it is true, is bound to overflow in compassion. Just as when the lamp is lit, it immediately starts radiating light. It immediately starts dispersing darkness. Once the inner light is lit, compassion is its radiation. Compassion is the proof that meditation has happened. Love is the fragrance that proves that the 1,000-petaled lotus in the innermost core of your being has bloomed, that the spring has come, that you are no more the same person you used to be, that that personality has ceased, individuality is born, that you are not living anymore in darkness, that you are light. These sutras are practical instructions. Remember it. Atisa is not a philosopher. No wise man ever is. He is not a thinker. Thinking is only for the mediocre, the foolish. The wise thinks not, the wise knows. Thinking is an effort to know. A guesswork, a groping in the dark, shooting arrows in the dark. Wisdom is knowing. And when you know, you need not guess. You are not guessing that this is morning and the birds are singing and the trees are bathed in the sunlight. You are not guessing it. You are not thinking that it is so. If somebody is guessing it, then he must be blind or at least drunk. It is an experience. And every experience is self-validating. Atisa is not a speculative thinker. What he is saying is not a philosophy, a system of thought. It is how he has attained. He is showing you the way. And the Buddhas can only show the way. You will have to walk upon them. Nobody else can walk for you. Nobody else can do it for you. No proxy is possible in existence. Yes, others can communicate how they attained, what pitfalls to avoid, how to go on judging whether you are moving in the right direction or not, what energies to use and what energies to discard, what is helpful and what is hindrance. They can give you little bit hints about the path. And I say little bit hints. They cannot give you a complete map either. Because each individual will have to follow a little bit different path. And each individual will come across unique experiences that nobody has come across before. And nobody may ever come across again. Each individual is so unique that no absolute map can be given. Only hints, vague hints, indications. You are not to cling to these instructions. Just understand them, absorb them, and don't be a fanatic. Don't say this has to be like this. If it is not like this, then I am not going to follow it. Then something is wrong. It will be something like this, but in a very vague way. It will have some fragrance similar, but not exactly the same. Similar, yes, but not the same. One has to be aware of it. If one is not aware, then one becomes a fanatic. And fanatics have never arrived. Their very fanaticism prevents them. These are small hints. These are not mathematical. These are not like 2 + 2 = 4. In the world of the mysterious, sometimes 2 + 2 = 3. Sometimes 2 + 2 = 5. It is very rarely that 2 + 2 = 4. Very rarely. Exception it is, not the rule. It is not mathematics, it is music. It is not logic, it is poetry. When you read a logical treatise, you read with a different mind. If you read poetry, you need a totally different approach. In logic, there is a clear-cut process. The process of syllogism. You know this is so, therefore, this is bound to be so. There is a therefore. In poetry, there is no therefore. Poetry takes quantum leaps. Poetry is a vision, not a logical process, a song, not a syllogism. Yes, even the song has some intrinsic logic in it, but it is not on the surface. And it is not for those who are on the path. It is only for those who have arrived. Once you have arrived, you will see the whole logicalness of each step that you had taken, but not before it. You will see why you had to jump, why you had to take a certain step. When you were taking that step, nothing was clear. Nothing was absolutely certain or guaranteed. You were taking that step according to your feeling, not according to your thinking. But later on, recapitulating, looking back, now thinking can be revived. Now you can search the undercurrent of logic. Those who have arrived are very logical. But those who are on the path, if they try to be logical, they will never arrive. This is one of the paradoxes to be understood. Hence the statements of a Buddha, Tilopa, Sarha, Atisa are really very logical, but only for those who have arrived. The logic can be felt only backwards. But when you are progressing towards the goal, the ultimate, everything is vague, hidden behind a cloud. It is like the early morning mist. In the afternoon, in the full noontide, the mist would have disappeared. But that full noontide has yet to happen. So think, meditate, feel these instructions, but don't take them in dead seriousness. There are bound to be few differences. Few things are going to happen on your way which did not happen on Atisa's way. Few things are going to happen on your way which have not happened on my way. There are as many ways in the world as there are people. Nobody can stand in your place. Even those who are standing very close to you are not standing exactly in the same place. Your angle of vision is bound to be a little bit different from the angle of vision of somebody who is standing just by our side holding your hand. No two persons can see the world in the exact same way. It is impossible. And everybody has to move from his place, his space. Now, Atisa existed 1,000 years before. He must have seen a totally different world. He must have walked through a totally different world. With a different kind of language, with a different kind of understanding that was prevalent, with different attitudes, approaches that were still valid, they are no more valid. They are no more relevant. That world has disappeared. Atisa's world exists no more. Still, his instructions are of tremendous importance, taken non-fanatically. Taken fanatically, you miss the whole point. One has to be very, very loose, relaxed. While thinking about the past Buddhas, one has to be available to them, open to them, but unclinging, detached. Knowing perfectly well that centuries have passed. Knowing perfectly well that I am not Atisa. So how I can follow these instructions absolutely? But Atisa is not saying you to follow his instructions absolutely. He is simply giving a glimpse of his vision and the way he has arrived to it. He is simply sharing his poetry with you, his compassion with you. Remember it. Otherwise, it is very easy for people to become fanatics. Why millions of people become fanatics in the world? For the simple reason. By becoming a fanatic, you avoid all experimenting. By becoming a fanatic, you escape from thinking on your own, feeling on your own. By becoming a fanatic, you throw all responsibility on somebody else's shoulders. Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, Atisa. Remember, your responsibility is such it cannot be given to anybody else. It cannot be thrown on somebody else. Your responsibility is absolutely yours. You will have to think, you will have to feel, you will have to meditate, you will have to walk. And let me remind you again, you may come across scenes which Atisa has never come. If you go to the Himalayas, and you want to climb to the Everest, there are many ways to climb, many sides. From one side, you may come across beautiful valleys and rivers and trees. From the other side, you may not come across any river. You may not come across trees at all. You may come across only rocks and rocks. From the third side, you may come across glaciers, virgin snow that has never melted. And you all will reach to the top. Those who have reached to the top will always be considerate, liberal. They cannot be stubborn. They cannot say this is the only path. Because they can see there are many paths from the top. They can see many pilgrims arriving, reaching from different routes, and each route has its own world. Atisa has followed a certain route. But he was very fortunate to have three enlightened masters. He has reached to the Everest at least from three routes. His vision is very comprehensive. His vision is wide. It is not narrow. Jesus says, "My path is narrow but straight." He had followed only one master. Naturally, his path is very narrow and straight. It is not the case with Atisa. His path is very zigzag and very wide. It contains many paths in it. It is a great synthesis. The first sutra, begin the development of taking with yourself. Let me remind you, in the last sutra, Atisa was saying that when you take the breath in, let it become your meditation, that all the suffering of all the beings in the world is riding on that incoming breath and reaching to your heart. Absorb all that suffering, pain, misery in your heart and see a miracle happen. Whenever you absorb somebody else's misery, pain, suffering, the moment you absorb it, it is transformed. The natural tendency is to avoid. The natural tendency is to protect yourself against suffering. The natural tendency is to keep aloof, not to sympathize, not to empathize. Even people, when they sympathize only formally. They pay a lip service, they don't mean it. If they really meant it, they could have helped the other person. They could have absorbed his suffering. They could have drunk his suffering. And it happens few times. And you know, there are people, if you meet them, you feel an unburdening. When they are gone, you feel light. You feel flowing. You feel more vibrant, more alive, as if they have taken a great burden off your head, off your chest, as if they have poured some nectar in your being. You feel a dance left within your heart when they leave. You wait again and again for them to come to you. You seek their company. You enjoy because you are nourished by their presence. The opposite kind of people are also there. If they meet you, they leave you more burdened than you ever were. They leave you in a kind of despair, disgust. You feel you have been sucked. Your energy is lower. They have taken something from your energy and they have not given anything to you. This is an ordinary experience. If people avoid you, remember, they are not responsible. Something in you makes them avoid you. If people don't want to meet you, if they find excuses to escape from you, remember, they are not responsible. You must be doing something negative to their energy. If people seek you, if people become friendly immediately, if people feel would like to come and sit close to you, would like to hold your hands, would like to be just with you, that means you must be knowingly or unknowingly helping them. Everybody is burdened with great misery. Everybody is under great suffering. Everybody's heart is hurting. There is much pain. Atisa says, before you can do with the whole existence, you will have to start with yourself first. This is one of the fundamental secrets of inner growth. You cannot do with others anything that you have not done in the first place with you. You can hurt others if you hurt yourself. You will be a pain in the neck of others if you are a pain in the neck yourself. You can be a blessing to others only if you are a blessing to yourself. Whatsoever you can do with others, you must have done to you before. Because that is the only thing that you can share. You can share only that which you have. You cannot share that which you don't have. Atisa says, begin the development of taking with yourself. Rather than starting taking the whole misery of the world and absorbing in the heart, start with your own misery. Don't go into the deep sea so fast. Learn swimming in shallow water. And if you start immediately taking the misery of the whole existence, it will remain simply an experiment in speculation. It won't be real. It can't be real. It will be just verbal. You can say to yourself, yes, I am taking the misery of the whole world. But what do you know of the misery of the whole world? You have not even experienced your own misery. We go on avoiding our own misery. If you feel miserable, you put on the radio or the TV and you become engaged. You start reading the newspaper so that you can forget the misery. Or you go to the movie. Or you go to the woman or the man. You go to the club. You go for shopping in the market. Just somehow to keep yourself away from yourself, so that you need not see the wound, so that you need not look how much it hurts within. People go on avoiding themselves, what they know of misery. How can they think of the misery of the whole existence? First, you have to begin with yourself. If you are feeling miserable, let it become a meditation. Sit silently, close the doors. First, feel the misery with as much intensity as possible. Feel the hurt. Somebody has insulted you. Now the best way to avoid the hurt is to go and insult him. So you become occupied with him. That is not meditation. If somebody has insulted you, feel thankful to him that he has given an opportunity to you to feel a deep wound. He has opened a wound in you. The wound may be created by many, many insults that you have suffered in your whole life. He may not be the cause of all the suffering, but he has triggered a process. You just close your room, sit silently, with no anger for the person, but with total awareness of the feeling that is arising in you, the hurt feeling that you have been rejected, that you have been insulted. And then you will be surprised that not only this man is there, all the men and all the women and all the people that have ever insulted you will start moving in your memory. You will start not only remembering them, you will start reliving them. You will be going in a kind of primal. Feel the heart. Feel the pain. Don't avoid it. That's why in many therapies, the patient is told not to take any drugs before the therapy begins, for a simple reason, that drugs are a way to escape from your inner misery. They don't allow you to see your wounds, they repress. They don't allow you to go into your suffering. And unless you go into your suffering, you cannot be released from the imprisonment of it. It is perfectly scientific, before going into a group, to drop all drugs. If possible, then even drugs like coffee, tea, smoking, because these are all ways. Have you watched? Whenever you feel nervous, you immediately start smoking. It is a way to avoid nervousness. You become occupied with smoking. Really, it is a regression. Smoking makes you again feel like a child, unworried, non-responsible. Because smoking is nothing but a symbolic breast. The heart is smoke going in. Simply takes you back to the days you were feeding on the mother's breast. The heart milk, the warm milk going in. And the nipple has become now the cigarette. The cigarette is a symbolic nipple. Through regression, you avoid the responsibilities, the pains of being adult. And that's what goes on and on through many, many drugs. The modern man is as much drugged as never before. Because the modern man is living in great suffering. It will be impossible without drugs to live in so much suffering. Those drugs create a barrier. They keep you drugged. They don't allow you enough sensitivity to know your pain. The first thing to do is close your doors and stop any kind of occupation. Looking at the TV, listening to the radio, reading a book. Stop all occupation. Because that too is a subtle drug. Just be silent, utterly alone. Don't even pray, because that again is a drug. You are becoming occupied. You start talking to God. You start praying. You escape from yourself. Atisa is saying, you just be yourself, whatsoever the pain of it, and whatsoever the suffering of it, let it be so. First experience it in its total intensity. It will be difficult. It will be heart-rending. You may start crying like a child. You may start rolling on the ground in deep pain. Your body may go through contortions. You may suddenly become aware that it is not only in the heart that the pain is, it is all over the body. That it is aching all over. That it is painful all over. That your whole body is nothing but a pain. If you can experience it, this is of tremendous importance, then start absorbing it. Don't throw it away. It is such a valuable energy, don't throw it away. Absorb it, drink it, accept it, welcome it, feel grateful to it. And say to yourself, this time I'm not going to avoid, this time I'm not going to reject, this time I'm not going to throw it away. This time I will drink it, receive it like a guest. This time I will digest it. It may take few days for you to be able to digest it, but the day it happens, you have stumbled upon a door which will take you really far, far away. A new journey has started in your life. You are moving into a new kind of being. Because immediately the moment you accept the pain with no rejection anywhere, its energy its quality changes. It is no more pain. In fact, one is simply surprised. One cannot believe it's so incredible. One cannot believe that suffering can be transformed into ecstasy, that pain can become joy. But in ordinary life, you are aware that opposites are always joined together. They are not opposites but complementaries. You know perfectly well your love can become any moment hate, and your hate can become any moment love. In fact, if you hate too much, intensely, totally, it is bound to become love. That's what happened to the person called Saul, who later on became Paul and founded this ugly phenomenon, Christian Church. Jesus is not the founder of Christian Church. The founder of Christian Church is Saint Paul. And the story is worth remembering. Born, his name was Saul. And he was so anti-Christ that his whole life was devoted in destroying Christians, Christianity. His whole dedication was how to persecute Christians and how to destroy any possibility of Christianity for the future. How to efface the name of Christ. He must have hated tremendously. His hate cannot be ordinary. When you devote your whole life for the object of your hatred, it is bound to be really total. Otherwise, who cares? If you hate something, you don't devote your whole life to it. But if you hate totally, then it becomes a life and death problem. Persecuting Christians, destroying their power holds, arguing with Christians, convincing them that this is nonsense, that this man Jesus was mad, a neurotic, a pretender, a hypocrite. One day it happened, the miracle happened. He was going to persecute more Christians into another town. On the way he was alone. And suddenly he saw Jesus appearing out of nowhere and asking him, "Why do you persecute me?" Out of shock, terror, he fell on the ground, apologizing, crying great tears. Of repentance, the vision disappears, and with the disappearance of the vision, the old Saul disappears. To remember this point, he changed his name to Paul. The old man is dead, a new man has arrived. And he became the founder of the Christian Church. He became a great lover of Jesus, the greatest lover the world has ever known. Hate can become love. Jesus had not appeared. It was just the intensity of his hate that has projected Jesus. It was not Jesus who had asked him, "Why do you persecute me?" It was his own unconscious who was suffering so much because of this hatred for Jesus. It was his own unconscious that has asked him, "Why do you persecute me?" It was his own unconscious that became personified in the vision of Jesus. The miracle happened because the hate was total. Whenever anything is total, it turns into its opposite. This is a great secret to be remembered. Whenever something is total, it changes into its opposite, because there is no way to go further. The cul-de-sac has arrived. Watch an old clock with a pendulum. It goes and goes, the pendulum goes to the left, to the extreme left, and then there is a point beyond which it cannot go. Then it starts moving towards the right. Opposites are complementaries. If you can suffer your suffering in totality, in great intensity, you will be surprised. Saul becomes Paul. You will not be able to believe when it happens for the first time that your own suffering absorbed willingly, welcomingly, becomes a great blessing. It is the same energy that becomes hate, that becomes love. It is the same energy that becomes pain, that becomes pleasure. It is the same energy that becomes suffering, that becomes bliss. But start with your own self. Make a small experiment with your own pains, sufferings, miseries. And once you have found the key, then you can share it with the whole existence. Then you can take all the suffering of all the world, or all the worlds, riding on the incoming breath, and your small heart is bigger than the whole universe, if you know what miracles it can do. And then pour your blessings. It is the same energy passing through your heart that becomes bliss, that becomes a blessing. Then let blessings go, riding on the outgoing breath, to all the nooks and corners of existence. Atisa says this is compassion. Compassion is becoming a transforming force into existence, transforming the ugly into beautiful, kissing the frog and transforming it into a prince. Transforming darkness into light. To become such a medium of transformation is compassion. Begin the development of taking with yourself. When evil fills the inanimate and animate universes, change bad conditions to the Bodhi path. This is the Buddhist alchemy. All evil can be transformed into Bodhi path. into the path to become a Buddha. Evil is not against you, just you don't know how to use it. Poison is not your enemy, just you don't know how to make a medicine out of it. In the wise hands, poison becomes medicinal. In the foolish hands, medicine can become poison. It all depends on you, your artfulness. Have you ever watched the word evil? Read backwards, it is life. Life can become evil. Evil can become life. It all depends how you read it. There are three things to be understood about this sutra. How to change bad conditions to the Bodhi path so that you can attain to Bodhicitta, the mind or no mind of a Buddha. First is, do not resist evil. That is the saying of Jesus. There is every possibility. He had traveled India. He had lived in India before he started his mission in Israel. That's why in the Bible, almost there is no account of his life. Only once he is mentioned that he had gone with his parents to the great temple and had argued with the rabbis there. He must have been near about 12 at that time. After that incident, there is no life story in the Bible. For 18 years, he simply disappears from Israel. And then suddenly, when he is 30, he appears again. His ministry lasted only for 3 years. By 33, he was crucified. Where he had been for 18 years, it is a long period. And why the Bible mentions nothing about it? But in Tibet, there are still available books which relate everything about those 18 years. He has been in the East. In fact, that was one of the reasons why he could not be accepted by the Jews. Because he had brought something very alien, strange. Although he was quoting the prophets from the Old Testament, but he was giving such new meanings to those old ancient statements, never heard before. He was bringing something foreign into the Jewish world. For example, this statement, do not resist evil. Now this is very un-Jewish. The Jewish God is very much against evil. He is so much against that there are stories that he destroyed whole cities, Sodom, Gomorrah. He destroyed whole cities because those cities had fallen to evil. There were good people too. But to destroy the evil people, even the good people were destroyed. The Jewish God says, I am a very jealous God. If you don't obey me, you will be destroyed. He is very dictatorial. And the Old Testament says, evil has to be punished. Eye for the eye. Jesus says again and again, it has been told to you that if somebody throws a brick at you, throw a stone, a rock at him. But I say unto you, if somebody hits on your one cheek, give him the other also. This is a line strange to the Jewish thinking. But this is not aligned to the Buddhist thinking. This is pure Buddhism. Do not resist evil. That is the first thing if you want to absorb evil in your heart and transform it. If you resist it, how you can transform it? Accept it. Jesus says, love your enemies. The Jewish God cannot love his enemies. So why? Men should love. If the God is incapable of loving his enemies, how can you expect poor men to love his enemies? And love your enemies, Jesus says, as you love yourself. Again, he has got it from some strange sources the Jews are not aware of. This is a Buddhist approach. This is the contribution of Buddha to the world. One of the greatest contributions ever. Because this is the inner alchemy. Accept evil. Don't resist it. Don't fight with it. Don't be angry with it. Absorb it. Because it can be transformed into good. The art of transforming suffering, pain, evil, into something good is the art of seeing the necessity of the opposite. Light can exist only if darkness exists. Then why hate darkness? Without darkness there will be no light. So those who love light and hate darkness are in a dilemma. They don't know what they are doing. Life cannot exist without death. Then why hate death? Because it is death that creates the space for life to exist. This is a great insight that death is the contrast, the background, the blackboard on which life is written with white chalk. Death is the darkness of the night on which life starts twinkling like stars. If you destroy the darkness of the night, the stars will disappear. That's what happens in the day. The stars are still there. Do you think they have disappeared? They are still there. But because it is too much light, you cannot see them. They can be seen only in contrast. The saint is possible only because of the sinner. Hence Buddha says, don't hate the sinner. He makes it possible for the saint to exist. They are two aspects of the same coin. Seeing this, one is neither attached to good nor detached to bad. One accepts both as part and parcel of life. In that acceptance, you can transform. Only through that acceptance, transformation is possible. And before you can transform suffering, you have to become a witness. That is the third point. First, do not resist evil. Second, know opposites are not opposites but complementaries, inevitably joined together. So there is no choice. Remain choiceless. And the third is, be a witness. Because if you are a witness to your suffering, you will be able to absorb it. If you become identified with it, you cannot absorb it. The moment you become identified with your suffering, you want to discard it. You want to get rid of it. It is so painful. But if you are a witness, then suffering loses all thorns, all stings. Then there is suffering and you are a witness to it. You are just a mirror. It has nothing to do with you. Happiness comes and goes. Unhappiness comes and goes. It is a passing soul. You are just there, a mirror to reflect. Life comes and goes. Death comes and goes. The mirror is not affected by either. The mirror reflects but remains unaffected. The mirror is not imprinted by either. A great distance arises when you witness, and only in that witnessing you can be able to transform the baser metal into gold. Only in that witnessing you become a scientist of the inner, a detached observer. Now you know the opposites are not opposites, so they can be changed into each other. And then it is not a question of destroying evil from the world, but of transforming evil into something beneficial, transforming poison into nectar. Drive all blame into one, the third sutra. The ordinary mind always throws the responsibility on somebody else. It is always the other who is making you suffer. Your wife is making you suffer. Your husband is making you suffer. Your parents are making you suffer. Your children are making you suffer. The financial system of the society, capitalism, communism, fascism, the political ideology prevalent, the social structure, or the fate, the karma, God, you name it. People have millions of ways to shirk responsibility. But the moment you say somebody else X, Y, Z is making you suffer, then you cannot do anything to change it. What can you do? When the society will change and communism will come, and there will be a classless world, then everybody will be happy. Before it, it is not possible. How can you be happy in a society which is poor? And how can you be happy in a society which is dominated by the capitalists? How can you be happy by a society which is bureaucratic? How can you be happy with a society which does not allow you freedom? Excuses and excuses and excuses. Excuses just to avoid one single insight that I am responsible for myself, that nobody else is responsible for myself, that it is absolutely and utterly my responsibility. Whatsoever I am my own creation. This is the meaning of the third sutra. Drive all blame into one, and that one is you. Once this insight settles that I am responsible for my life, for my suffering, for my pain, for all that has happened to me and is happening to me, I have chosen it this way. These are the seeds that I had sown, and now I am cropping the reap, that I am now reaping the crop. I am responsible. Once this insight becomes a natural understanding in you, then everything else is simple. Then life starts taking a new turn. It starts moving in a new dimension. That dimension is conversion, revolution, mutation. Because once I know I am responsible, I also know that I can drop it any moment I decide to drop. Nobody can prevent me from dropping it. Can anybody prevent you from dropping your misery? From transforming your misery into bliss? Nobody. Even if you are in a jail, chained, imprisoned, nobody can imprison you, your soul still remains free. Of course, you have a very limited situation, but even in that limited situation, you can sing a song. Either you can cry tears of helplessness, or you can sing a song. Even with chains on your feet, you can dance. Then even the sound of the chains will have a melody to it. The fourth sutra, be grateful to everyone. Atisha is really very, very scientific. First he says, take the whole responsibility on yourself. Second, he says, be grateful to everyone. Now nobody is responsible for your misery except you. accept your own doing, then what is left? Be grateful to everybody. Because everybody is creating a space for you to be transformed. Even those who think that they are obstructing you, even those whom you think about that they are enemies, your friends, your enemies, good people and bad people, favorable circumstances, unfavorable circumstances, they all together are creating the context in which you can be transformed and you can become a Buddha. Be grateful to all. A man once came and spat on Buddha, on his face. Of course, his disciples were enraged. His closest disciple, Ananda, asked him, "This is too much." He was red hot with anger. He said to Buddha, "Just give me permission so that I can show to this man what he has done." Buddha wiped his face and said to the man, "Thank you, sir. You created a context in which I could see whether I can still be angry or not. And I am not, and I am tremendously happy. And also you created a context for Ananda. Now he can see that he can still be angry. So many thanks, we are so grateful. Once in a while, please." You are invited to come. Whenever you have the urge to spit on somebody, you can come to us. It was such a shock to the man, he could not believe his eyes what is happening. He had come expecting that he will anger Buddha. He had failed. The whole night he could not sleep. He tossed and turned and he will not. He could not sleep. Continuously the idea haunted. His spitting on the Buddha, one of the most insulting things. And the Buddha remaining calm and quiet as he was before, as if nothing has happened. Wiping his face and telling him, "Thank you, sir. And whenever you have this desire to spit on somebody, please come to us." He remembered it again and again. That face, that calm and quiet face, those compassionate eyes. And when he had said thank you, it was not just a formality. He was really grateful. His whole being was saying that he is grateful. His whole atmosphere was grateful. Just as he could see that Ananda was red hot with anger, Buddha was so cool, so loving, so compassionate. He could not forgive himself now what he has done. He spit on the man, a man like Buddha. Early the next morning he rushed back, fell down in the feet of Buddha and said, "Forgive me, sir. I could not sleep the whole night." Buddha said, "Forget all about it. There is no need to ask forgiveness for something which is already past. So much water has gone down the Ganges. Buddha was sitting on the bank of the Ganges under the tree. He showed the man, look, each moment so much water is flowing down. 24 hours have passed. Why you are carrying it, something that is no more existential? Forget all about it. And I cannot forgive you because in the first place I was not angry at you. If I was angry, I could have forgiven you. If you really need forgiveness, ask Ananda. Fall in his feet. He will enjoy it. Be grateful to everyone. For those who have helped, for those who have hindered, for those who have been indifferent, be grateful to all, because they all together are creating the context in which Buddhas are born, in which you can become a Buddha. The insurpassable protection of emptiness is to see the manifestations of bewilderment as the four kayas. Atisa talks about the four bodies. The four bodies are significant to be understood. The first is called Dharmakaya, the body of the ultimate law. And what is the ultimate law? Emptiness is the ultimate law. All is empty. If you really want to grow, you will have to soak this insight into yourself. All is empty. Life is empty, death is empty, all phenomena is empty, because nothing abides. Everything passes by. All is dream stuff. If this is understood, this will protect you. How you can be insulted if all is empty? How you can be miserable if all is empty? How can there be pain if all is empty? You are empty, the other is empty. So you must have seen a dream that the other was insulting you, that the other had spit on you. If you really want to protect your understanding, this is the first body to grow around yourself, the body of emptiness, the milieu of emptiness. All is empty. Buddha used to send his disciples to the funeral pyres to see, to meditate there. The newcomers had to be there for 3 months in the beginning. Just where bodies are burned. Sit there and watch. Day in, day out, people will be brought in, burned, and then the friends will leave. What kind of life is this? What substance it has got? Just the other day, the man was so haughty, so proud, so egoistic, that if you had said anything wrong, he would have jumped upon you. And now where he is? Disappeared in the flames. This is what life is. Sooner or later, I am also going to be on the funeral pyre. All will be burned. So why bother? Why make so much fuss? It is only a few days' dream. And those few days are not much in the eternity of time. Just momentary. Let this body of emptiness grow around you. You will be protected by it. The second body is Nirmankaya. The first arising of compassion. When all is empty, when everybody is on the funeral pyre, then compassion arises. It is not to be cultivated, remember. It arises out of the first body. If you cultivate it, you still believe in the ego. If you cultivate it, you still believe in character. If you cultivate it, you still believe in virtue. And if there is no self, what is virtue? If there is no self, what is character? If there is no self, then what is good? First settle into nobodiness, and then the second body arises on its own accord. Nirmankaya means the body of creation. It's strange. The first body is the body of emptiness, and the second body is the body of creation. But this is the insight of all the great Buddhas, that if you become a nobody, great creation arises out of you. The whole starts flowing out of you. You become a vehicle, a passage, a medium, a voice for the whole. And with the second body arising, the first experience will be of great compassion. Of course, in the beginning, it will be partial, conditional, caused by the suffering of others. You see an old man dying on the road and compassion arises. You see somebody starving and compassion arises. It has a cause outside. If nobody is dying and nobody is starving, there will be no compassion. In the second body, compassion comes and goes. Arises in certain situations, disappears into certain other situations. Out of the second, the third crystallizes. The third body is called Sambhogkaya, the body of bliss. In the third body, compassion is unconditional. It does not arise and does not disappear. It remains, it abides. It is not a question whether somebody is suffering or not. One simply is compassion in the third body. In the second body, compassion is a relationship. When there is a need, it happens. In the third body, compassion becomes your very state of being. Need or no need, it is there. It is like a light burning in the night. It goes on radiating, whether somebody is in the room or not. Whether somebody needs light or not. That is not the point. the light goes on radiating. In the third body, the body of bliss, compassion is a natural phenomenon, just as you go on breathing. Even while you are asleep, you go on breathing. A Buddha is compassionate even while asleep. A Buddha is compassionate simply. Compassion is not something that arises like a wave and disappears. Now, compassion is oceanic. And the fourth body is called Swabhavakaya. The body of ultimate nature, of spontaneity, of your innermost being as it is. In the fourth body, all distinctions disappear. Dualities are transcended. Good, bad, self, no self, mind, no mind, samsara, nirvana, God, devil, all dualities are transcended. One simply is, with no distinctions, with no categories, with no divisions. This is the existential body. This is the real thing to be attained. Each seeker after truth passes through these four bodies. In order an excellent means is to have the four provisions. How to attain these four bodies? There are four provisions. First is observe. Observe without evaluation. Observe everything. Don't miss any opportunity to observe, because it is not a question of what you are observing. The question is that observation is growing. Observe everything. The trees, the birds, the animals, the people, the traffic, your own mind and its traffic, your own reactions, others' reactions. Use every situation to observe. So observation becomes deep-rooted in you. And the second, analyze. But only after you have observed. Don't mix them. First, observation has to be simple observation with no analysis, with no judgment, with no evaluation. When you have observed, then analyze, then go into details, then dissect, then see the parts, how it is made, because each experience is very complex. If you really want to understand it, you will have to dissect it into its parts. And then the third, choose that which brings more and more bliss, silence, serenity, calmness to you. And the fourth, discard all that which brings tension, anxiety, anguish, hell to you. These are the four provisions. If you follow these four provisions, four bodies will arise in you. In order to bring any situation to the path quickly, as soon as it is met, join it with meditation. And remember, each situation has to become an opportunity to meditate. What is meditation? Becoming aware of what you are doing, becoming aware of what is happening to you. Somebody insults you. Become aware. What is happening to you when the insult reaches you? Meditate over it. This is changing the whole gestalt. When somebody insults you, you concentrate on the person, why he is insulting me. Who he thinks he is. How I can take the revenge. If he is very powerful, you surrender. You start wagging your tail. If he is not very powerful, you see that he is weak, you pound upon him. But you forget yourself completely in all this. The other becomes the focus. This is missing an opportunity for meditation. Somebody insults you, you meditate. Gurdjieff has said that when my father was dying, I was only 9. He called me close to his bed and whispered in my ears that, my son, I am not leaving much to you, not in worldly things, but I have one thing to tell you that was told to me by my father on his deathbed. It has helped me tremendously. It has been my treasure. You are not very grown up yet. You may not understand what I am saying, but keep it, remember it. One day you will be grown up and then you may understand. This is a key. It unlocks the doors of great treasures. Of course, Gurdjieff could not understand it at that moment, but it was the thing that changed his whole life. And the father said a very simple thing. He said, whenever somebody insults you, my son, tell him you will meditate over it for 24 hours and then you will come and answer him. Gurdjieff could not believe that this is such a great key. He could not believe that this is something so valuable that I have to remember it. And we can forgive a young child of 9 years old. But when something is said by a dying father who had loved him tremendously, and immediately after saying it, he breathed his last. It became imprinted on him. He could not forget it. Whenever he will remember his father, he will remember the saying. Without understanding truly, he started practicing it. If somebody will insult him, he will say, "Sir, 24 hours I have to meditate over it, that's what my father has told me, and he is no more, and I cannot disobey an old dead man. And he had loved me tremendously, and I have loved him tremendously, and now there is no way to disobey him. You can disobey when a father is alive, but when a father is dead, how can you disobey? So please, forgive me. I will come after 24 hours and answer. And he says that meditating on it for 24 hours has given me the greatest insight into my being. Sometimes I have found that the insult was right. That's how I am. So I will go to the person and say, "Sir, thank you. You were right. It was not an insult. It was simply a statement of fact. You had called me stupid. I am." Or sometimes it will happen, meditating 24 hours, I will come to know that it is absolute lie. But when something is a lie, why be offended by it? So I will not go even to tell him that it is a lie. A lie is a lie. Why be bothered by it? But watching, meditating, slowly, slowly, he became more and more aware of his reactions rather than the actions of others. This is what Atisha says: in order to bring any situation to the path quickly, as soon as it is met, join it with meditation. Whatsoever happens, good, bad, success, failure, immediately become aware what is happening. Don't miss a single moment. Don't lag behind. Be present to it. And you will be surprised. Errors will start disappearing from your life. And then whatsoever you will do will be the right. People ask me what is right and what is wrong. And my answer is, if something arises out of awareness, it is right. If something arises out of unawareness, it is wrong. Right and wrong are not concerned with what you do, but with how you do. It is not a question of what, but of how. Meditatively or non-meditatively. Alert, awake, or you go on doing things as if you are a sleepwalker. The concise epitome of heart instruction work with five forces. These are the five forces. The first force is intensity, totality. If you really want to have a transformed life, if you really want to become a light unto yourself, if you really want to know the ultimate mystery of existence and the ultimate ecstasy of being alive, then the first force is intensity, totality. Whatsoever you do, do intensely at the optimum. Don't be lousy, don't be lazy, don't be partial. Go into it wholeheartedly. Let it become a total absorption. If you dance, dance so totally that the dancer disappears and only dance remains, and it will be a transformation. If you love, love totally. So totally that there is no lover found. The lover is found only if you are holding something back. That which you are holding becomes the lover. If you are holding something back, that which you are holding becomes the dancer, the singer. If you are totally in the dance, in the song, in the love, who is there left behind to say, "I am the lover, I am the dancer"? nothing is left, and totality transforms. It is only 100 degrees intensity that one evaporates from the material into the spiritual, from the earth into the sky, from the ordinary into the extraordinary. The second force is familiarization. Do and be what you really want to do and be. Life is lived according to gestalts that you have created around yourself. If you really want to be something else, then familiarize yourself with it. If you want to play on the guitar, practice. If you want to dance, practice. If you want anything to happen in your life, imbibe more and more of it and drop all that is against it. And the way to drop is not to use it, because by using you create ways in you for it to come again and again and again. The force of white seeds. White seeds is a metaphor. Atisa means drop all that is black. Don't go on cultivating the black seeds of anger, of jealousy, of hatred, of possessiveness, of domination. Drop all black seeds. Even if they arise, watch. Absorb them in the heart and they will become white seeds. And what are the white seeds? Love, compassion, service, sincerity, sensitivity, awareness. These are the white seeds. If you want one day to have white flowers in your life, you will have to sow white seeds. And the fourth force is reproach, to abjure completely ego-oriented thoughts. Watch, whatsoever arises out of the ego, whatsoever is an ego trip, immediately disconnect yourself with it. Even to linger with it for a little while is dangerous, because lingering will give it energy. The moment you know it is an ego trip, immediately disconnect yourself. And everybody knows when one is going on an ego trip. It is not an art to be learned. Everybody is born with it. You know it. You can go with it in spite of your knowing. That is another matter. But you know it. Whenever pride arises, whenever ego raises its head, you know it. Cut that head immediately in a single blow. And the fifth force, the force of dedication of all virtue to the welfare of others. Whatsoever good happens to you, immediately share it. This is one of the most fundamental things in Buddhism. Don't hoard it. Don't be a miser. If love has arisen, share it, savor it. If you cannot find people, savor it on the trees, on the rocks, but savor it. Don't hoard it, because if you hoard it, it turns into poison. If you hoard it, it goes sour and bitter. Share it. And the more you share, the more will be coming into you from unknown sources. Slowly, slowly, you will be able to know the ways of inner economics. The outer economics is hoard if you want to have things. And the inner economics is just the opposite. Hoard and you will not have it. Give and you will have it. Give more and you will have more of it. And the last sutra, the purpose of all dharma is the instructions for transference in the Mahayana are the five forces. Behavior is important. All these five forces can be significant only if you behave, if you act, if you simply contemplate over them, they are meaningless. They will remain important. Actualize them in your life. And the last sutra, the purpose of all dharma is contained in one point. That point is the ego. The ego is false. If you live according to the false ego, your whole life will remain false. If you live without the ego, your whole life will have the flavor of reality, truth, authenticity. Think, meditate, practice. Enough for today.